again, everybody, and welcome back to the second hour of At Your Service tonight. Special fill-in guest host, Bono. No, it's not really. Just kidding. Dave Simons. That would be me, yours truly, certified financial planner by day, sometimes even by night, but occasionally let out of the house for good behavior, mainly because my wife is out of town, so... That makes it easier to say, dear, I'm not going to be around because my dear is not around either. So, again, little bachelor life in the Simons household for a couple of nights. All right, folks, aren't you looking forward to this election? Don't you just love this campaign cycle? And you just can't wait to get to... Yeah, maybe you don't answer that. We all have our opinions, don't we? And some of them are very strong. I know I have a very strong opinion on the matter, but I don't discuss personal politics, and you're welcome. If you want that, there are plenty of venues to go. Those on the right know their place. They'll go, and they'll kind of be in their own doom loop, if you will. And those on the left have their own doom loop, and that's where they'll go. Sorry if I'm offending anybody. I'm being an equal opportunity antagonist right now. But that's just the world in which we live. And I don't get involved in that publicly. There's no point in it. If you want to hear people bloviate and have hot takes, knock yourself out. I just don't really care about that kind of stuff. However, here's where I do care about it. When it affects what I do for my own clients, when it affects what I do in my own personal portfolio, how is this election cycle going to impact the financial markets? Now we're in my lane of expertise, and now that's something that is worthy of public discussion. I think if there's anything that both sides agree on is this could be a contested election. It's very likely that everybody could wake up the next morning and we really don't even know who the declared winner is at this point. And even if it looks like we do have one, it doesn't mean it's officially and legally over. We do have some history here, don't we, my friends? Back in 2000, Gore versus Bush, and it all came down to Florida. Remember that? And this new phrase entered our American lexicon that was called the hanging chad, right? We remember it well. And so what I wanted to look at is to go back in history and see how the financial markets behaved back then when it looked like there was a possibility of a constitutional crisis. It cannot be overstated. It was very palpable at that time. I was managing money at that time as well. And there was a lot of concern. And when are we ever going to know who won? Was it George Bush? Was it Al Gore? We don't know. Is this actually going to get to the Supreme Court? I mean, that seemed mind-boggling. Nothing like this had ever been seen before in the country. Now, before we look at the numbers, because I'm going to tell you exactly what happened in the financial markets, just to let you know, to set that scorecard right, it was a five-week period from the day of the election, which was November 7th of 2000, to December 13th, when the Supreme Court actually did get involved and basically said, hey, you courts down there in Florida, what you're doing is not constitutional. Null and void. Stop counting. It's over. Now, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, didn't actually officially and unilaterally declare Bush the winner, but by their actions, it effectively did that. And Al Gore was gracious enough, as soon as that decision came down, he conceded, and it was over. Constitutional crisis avoided. But man, you didn't know that going in. So to set the stage, remember in the financial markets what was happening that had nothing to do with politics. The bull market, the great bull market of the 1990s, to this day, 95 through 99, that five-year period is the greatest five-year period in the history of the U.S. stock market. And it was internet-driven, and finally it became greed-driven, and we had the internet bubble and pop, early 2000. So by the time we got to the election, the market had been going down most of the year. Now, the internet stocks were especially brutalized, and the NASDAQ, that high-octane, tech-heavy index, was already in full-fledged bear market mode. The two main benchmarks, the Dow and the S&P 500, had not yet entered into bear market territory. They would by 01, but we didn't know that at the time. And there was still some optimism that what was happening was temporary. It was about time the internet stocks had their comeuppance. And all the people who quit their jobs and were now day trading on this somewhat still new entity called the internet, well, they had their comeuppance too, very deserving. It's about over. And now that the election is settled, now things are going to be better in 01. Of course, we realize they weren't. Okay, so now back to that 5-week period. So the election, of course, on a Tuesday, and it was November 7th. People wake up the next morning, it's being contested. We don't know who's going to be declared the legal winner. And as you might expect, the stock market wasn't particularly enamored with that. Remember that Mr. Market wants certainty. Mr. Market is not a fan of uncertainty. And we got that in spades back then during that 5-week period. So that first day of trading, Wednesday, November 8th, the S&P 500 fell 1.6%. Now, that is not a crash, but on a point basis, it'll start to get your attention. That's like the Dow today falling between 500 and 600 points. It's not going to panic anyone. It shouldn't, but it'll make headlines. Okay, that was the first day. Well, then Thursday, more of the same. Friday, more of the same. And in just the 3 days after that election, still don't know who's going to win. The S&P now is down 4.6%. Now we've got something. Still not an official correction, but nearly a 5% pullback in 3 days. And it seems to all be related to the unknown of the election outcome. Uh-oh, what's going to happen? Well, we get into the next full week of trading. And not much happened. Actually, quite a bit happened. A lot of big up, a lot of big down. But at the end of the week, the proverbial gerbil in a spinning wheel, the S&P was basically flat. It was flat. It was actually up 2 points. Big deal. Not discernible. So we're still now down about 4.5% after 2 weeks. But then we get into the week of Thanksgiving and then into the week of December. And all heck is starting to break loose now, because now we don't know where this thing is going with the election. There are suits. There are countersuits. Now we're hearing legal experts talk about constitutional crisis unlike we've ever seen. Remember what I said about the market not liking uncertainty? Well, there was a ton of it. And the market started to decline that Thanksgiving week. I'm going to finish this story, tell you the conclusion of what happened, and there's got to be a bit of a curveball to it, and then we'll apply it to the potential for this year. You're listening to At Your Service. My name is Dave Simons. We'll be right back.
No fights, just insights. Talking politics with respect for all. KMOX, your connection to St. Louis and the region.
Hello again, everybody. It's coming up on 20 minutes after 9 o'clock. Stay tuned, of course, to KMOX throughout the night as we've got, looks like some nasty weather moving into the St. Louis area. But stay right with us. And if there's any updates on watches and warnings and all that, we will be sure to bring it to you. All right, let's continue this discussion. We're going back to 2000 now, when we had that 5-week period when there was no legally official declared winner of the presidency after the November 5th election. And it was caught up mainly down in Florida with the courts down there because of some counties where they had to go back and recount by hand. Remember the story, hanging chads and all that. You had the courts get involved. The Florida Supreme Court were making rules that the Bush camp thought favored Gore. And so they took it to the Supreme Court and they would eventually decide the matter, but not until December 13th. All right, we're in the middle of that. As I already spelled out here, the immediate first few days after the election, when it looked like, this is bad, we've never had this before, and the market doesn't like uncertainty, the S&P was down about 4.5%. Then it took some time off, not much movement for the next week. Then we get into Thanksgiving, the shortened Thanksgiving trading week, only 4 days, and the market fell again, and then it continued to fall through the first week of December. By the time we get through the first week of December, we're a few weeks after the election now, maybe a full month, the S&P 500 now is down 8.2%. Typically, a correction is officially defined by a decline of 10% or more. A bear market is 20%. So by the pure definition, we haven't had a correction, but actually we have. Remember what I stated earlier? The market had already been falling before the election because of the internet bubble bursting. So we are now officially in a correction overall. And much of that has happened in the previous month related to the election. But even that by itself, it's not a crash. And the market was actually pretty reasonable. I remember thinking about it at the time and talking to some very, very nervous clients at the time. And yet you look at the data and it's like, you know what? It's doing okay, all things considered. Now, I'm going to throw the little curveball here at you as we get into the week of December 4th through December 8th. That week of the 5 weeks would contain the best single day in the market during the 5 week period and the worst back to back. And here's the key. Neither one of the days had anything to do with the supposed constitutional crisis on the horizon. It had everything to do. Both days had everything to do with the things that always matter to the market. And it's something that I write about in my commentary and have for 24 years. It's something that I've talked about on this very show, which I've hosted off and on since 1996. I now have done a podcast for the past year, and I've done two shows on the podcast about this very thing on elections and their impact on the financial markets. And it's basically zero. The markets have always moved. If you really want to dumb it down into two basic subjects or issues, it's corporate earnings and it's Fed activity related to interest rates, related to inflation. We'll call that just kind of one big issue there. How are corporations doing and what's the Fed up to? You want to know how the market's going to respond? Well, somehow get the numbers there in advance. All right. That's it. End of story. No more complicated than that. So let's go back to the chalkboard. What was the best day? Well, it was Tuesday, December 5th. These numbers are astounding, what happened that day. It's one thing that the S&P 500 skyrocketed 4.2%. That's like today the Dow moving up about 1,600 points. Now that will make the nightly news. Thousands of points in the Dow. That's basically what happened on that one day, December 5th. Why? And by the way, the NASDAQ, I can't forget that. The NASDAQ, the tech-heavy index, which had been bludgeoned over the previous 11 months or so, in one day, went up 10.5% that day. The equivalent of the Dow today would be about 4,000 points, actually a little bit more, 10.5%. Can you imagine going home if you haven't paid any attention to the market and you turn on the news and they say, well, the Dow jumped 4,000 points today? That's what the NASDAQ did on December 5th on a percentage basis of 2,000. Why? It had nothing to do with the election. There was no news that day. Then Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan gave a speech and hinted that the Fed might, could, possibly, maybe, cut interest rates. Markets love interest rates going down, don't they? That will never change. One of the great market truisms. Just that little hint, that little suggestion, caused this huge rally. It's one of the, by the way, at that time, it was the greatest one-day rally in the history of the NASDAQ. NASDAQ was formed in 1971. To this day, as we fast forward to 24, it remains the third best single day in history. During a supposed constitutional crisis, that's not supposed to happen if elections have major impacts on the markets. The very next day was the worst day. of that five-week period. Gave back half the gains of the day before. NASDAQ dropped about 5%. S&P dropped about 2% or so. Why? What happened? Something bad about what's going on in the court system? No. There's a company called Apple Computer. Yeah, that's what it was called back then because that's all they sold. There was no such thing as the iPhone. Apple Computer, that day warned that their earnings were going to be soft. And now the emperor now really has no clothes because all the optimism that somehow these tech companies were going to turn things around when you had the behemoth at the time, one of the true market leaders, even to this day, it's amazing, quarter century later. But back then when Apple said, yeah, and by the way, lower your estimates heading into 2001, something's happening out there in the economy. People aren't buying computers like they once were. Market tanks. Folks, as we head for home on this particular subject matter, do you see what the whole point that I've been trying to make here the last few minutes? I understand if you're worried about the election this November. Because depending on what side of the aisle, you really think this country could be in trouble if that guy wins. We all think, no matter what side, it's if that other guy wins, maybe I'll just move to New Zealand. I mean, people are really worried about this election. I get it. It is palpable. I'm not discounting this. I'm not being glib at all. I'm talking specifically about the impact of the market the next day. It just historically has not. And I'm here to tell you that I never like make predictions. I think the market's going to go up 4.2%. But I feel pretty confident in saying the market's not going to crash no matter who wins. The very next day after November 5th, I believe that's the day of the election this year, November 5th. Because it just never has. The only time the markets really had a major impact, believe it or not, was after Trump won in 2016. Because there was this real fear, well, no way is that guy going to win. He's crazy. And then you had some economists, left-leaning especially, who said, look, if he wins, we're not just going to go into a recession. We could have a depression. I mean, the market's going to crash. That came from some very high-profile people who are very concerned. And if you remember the story in 16, the futures that night when it looked like Trump was going to be declared the winner, they did fall. They fell rather dramatically. It's like, oh, geez, I guess they were right. But they weren't. The market the next, all the futures came all the way back up. And then, as it turned out, the market was off to the races after Trump won. But here's the thing, to show you that I'm not playing sides here. The same thing happened after fast forward to 2020 after Biden won. The same thing happened when the right said, if that guy wins, I got to get out of the market. And yet the market did very, very well after Biden won. It only declined in 22 when we started getting worried about a recession. And the Fed, here it is, it wasn't the election. It was the Fed raising interest rates for the first time. And they would do so for a year. The Fed, by the way, whoever the chairman is, I'm telling you, has more power over your 401k than whoever is sitting in the White House. That is a fact. And it will be factual again after this election. So that's what you want to focus on. It always gets back to the economy and to the Fed and to corporate earnings. And I know that's what we are going to focus on again this year in our little corner of the world. When we come back, I am going to play one of my more recent podcasts that gets into the subject of something that has bugged me and has troubled me for a long, long time. Because we are being sold a bill of goods, and I think it's hurting a lot of folks who are just trying to invest and make reasonable returns. Stick with us. We'll get to that when we come right back on At Your Service.
Everything St. Louis Cardinals. It's Cardinals Conversations. Use the Odyssey app or hear it on your favorite podcast platform. From game analysis, player and management interviews, it's exclusive Cardinals content from KMOX Sports, where the Redbird talk never stops.
.9 35 in St. Louis. You're listening to At Your Service. Dave Simons filling in tonight. Before we broke at the last hour, so it was a little bit before 9 o'clock Central, I had asked a little question. Should you care about measuring your personal portfolio against a benchmark like the S&P 500? and I left you hanging with the what the answer should be. And I think if you're an experienced investor, you would know the answer is no. H-E double hockey sticks, no. I want to delve into that because it's a really important topic for any investor, because a lot of damage is done by believing the lie that somehow individual investors should be measuring themselves against some predetermined benchmark. I do this podcast. I've been doing it for about a year. I record one every week. They each last 10 to 12 minutes on some financial topic. And I picked this one out from just a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it's just one of my more important things I've talked about, because I've seen a lot of damage done by people who believe this lie that's either talked about on television or the papers or whatever. So without further ado, a Simon Says quick hit. You know, occasionally I get asked what I read on a regular basis for my profession. The first one's easy, and I think I might have mentioned this before, the Wall Street Journal. Every morning I have a routine. I get up, make my cup of coffee, and I now read the journal online, no more hard copies anymore. And I read it front to back, Monday through Saturday. Now, not obviously every word, that would be impossible, but I do look at every headline, and then I determine what stories I think would be appropriate for me to kind of peruse and pertinent to my business and even my own personal interest. Another one, and this is the weekly, is Barron's. Barron's is a must read, really, for anyone in the financial industry. And for those of you who do it on your own, you're investing on your own, if you really have the interest and the time, and you have to be a little bit of an investment geek, and I say that very kindly with all due respect, to really read Barron's all the way through. Now, there is no perfect publication. One of my biggest pet peeves, whether it's written publications or online, what I call bubble vision with CNBC and Fox Business, and I watch them, is that they talk too much about predictions, where the market's going. What does everyone think the latest GDP report's going to be? What do you think the election is going to mean to the markets? And that's all fine and dandy. I mean, I read that stuff, but we don't hardly ever base some investment decision because of what some analyst says on TV or something that I read about a prediction. I mean, there's great nuggets of information there that can be useful, but the actual prediction of, like, I think the Dow is going to finish at, you know, 42,400. I don't care about that. It's meaningless. So let's jump from there to one of the things that Barron's does, and I think it's twice a year they do this, is their big money poll. And they interview people like me. They interview financial professionals, people who actually manage money, and they ask them a variety of different things about their prediction about where markets are going, what the Fed's going to do, will the U.S. outperform international, what do you think about gold, interest rates? I mean, it's dozens of questions, even like who's going to win the election, as if I care about what some financial advisor in Pittsburgh has to say about it, but whatever. Here is the question, though, that really has always bothered me, and frankly, for a publication as esteemed as Barron's, I'm a little surprised that they ask this. And I'm going to put it up on the screen. This is actually taken from the big money poll from Barron's. And it basically says, are you beating the S&P 500 for you personally and for your clients? And you can see this one that was just out a couple of weeks ago. Personally, 53% of respondents said, yeah, I'm beating the S&P with my own personal money. 54% said that they're also beating the broader market, the S&P, for their clients. Now, I question that, frankly, only because we know for a fact that most mutual fund managers who get paid to beat a benchmark and try their darndest, a majority of them do not beat the S&P 500. But yet, financial advisors, half of them say they do. Yeah, I don't know about that. But it's meaningless. There's no reason any investor, any of you watching right now, should even care about beating some predetermined market benchmark. It doesn't mean a hill of beans to you. It doesn't. Think about this. How could you actually possibly perhaps beat the S&P 500 with all of your investments? Because that's really what they're asking. Are you beating the S&P for your clients and for yourself? The only way to do it is you have to be more aggressive in your investment decisions than the broader market itself. And one way to do it is actually to invest in the NASDAQ, at least historically. The NASDAQ's been around since 1971. So you could put all of your money into the QQQs, as we call them, the triple Qs, even though it's four Qs, and put them in the triple Qs, and that's the NASDAQ 100. Now, no guarantee going forward. And by the way, this is not a recommendation, as I think all of you know. I'm just saying for the past 50 years or so, the one way to beat the S&P is to have your money in the Qs or some kind of NASDAQ-related thing. Who in their right mind would do that with their investments, all of them? I'm not talking about a portion, okay? It's fine. We have a portion of client money in something that's fairly aggressive and in things that have historically beaten the S&P for this sliver. Depending on the risk tolerance of each individual client, that's going to be a small percentage or perhaps more. That's obvious. But I get back to the question, are you beating the S&P? And half the advisors say I am. First of all, I don't think that that's probably true. But again, it misses the point. It's meaningless. It's a stupid question to ask. And yet that's what I see all the time on the financial shows and read in publications about trying to beat the market and all that. It's fine if you are a mutual fund manager or a private money manager and you are measured against a benchmark. No one is going to hire you until they see what your performance has been against whatever appropriate benchmark. So you might be measured against the S&P or the Russell 1000 growth or the value, or if you're a small cap person manager, you might be measured against the Russell 2000. That's fine. You can select little things to go into your portfolio. But remember what the question is. Are your clients beating the S&P 500? And the only way that you can do that is to have all of your money in something that's really aggressive. And nobody is going to do that. Do you really? I go back to the NASDAQ. Do you know the NASDAQ fell over 80%? It was something like 84, 85% during the internet bubble bursting from 2000 to 02. Why would you ever expose all of your money in an attempt to beat the S&P and to say you beat the S&P by putting all of your money to the NASDAQ? Okay, let's forget about that and just say, hey, the S&P 500. I don't really necessarily want to beat the S&P. I know even professionals can't really do it when they try. So I'll just put my money in the S&P 500 index. That's fine for a portion. Again, we have, depending on the model and the client, a portion of assets in something related to the S&P 500. But we also have perhaps a little international. We also have a little small cap, bonds, alternatives, real estate perhaps, some kind of commodity, whatever. You have a diversified portfolio. Nowhere in that equation ever should it be, am I beating the S&P? It doesn't mean anything. You know what matters is your plan. The plan. The plan, the plan, the plan, the plan. I could keep saying the plan. When I started this podcast last year, one of the very first episodes I did was something called the PAIR principle. It is actually copyrighted by yours truly. And the P of that is the plan. It all starts there and eventually gets back to the plan. And that plan is specific to you. What are you trying to accomplish with your money? What is the purpose for your investable money? What do you want it to do over time? Do you want it to generate income? Do you want it to grow just a little bit of above inflation? Would you like it to grow even more than that? Do you want to be more aggressive? Are you going to start taking some money out because you need a new house? All this is part of the plan. And nowhere in any of the subsets of that is, oh yeah, beat the S&P 500. My fear with this and my problem is the narrative that's out there that is just that permeates the financial landscape and the industry and then is thrown back out to the investing public as if that's something that you should ascribe to or go toward, I should say, is trying to beat the market. You know what is a similar question to me to show you how silly this is? Me saying, hey, this weekend, I'm going to fly to Pittsburgh or Tuesday. What? That doesn't make any sense. Did you stumble over your words? No. I'm going to fly to Pittsburgh or Tuesday. It's nonsensical. So if somebody asks you, hey, how about your portfolio? You beating the S&P 500? Give them that Pittsburgh or Tuesday look like, I don't know what you mean. What are you talking about? Why would that even matter? And then you would try to explain to them, there's no reason I'm going to put all of my money in all stocks. That's the only way you can beat the market, by the way. You have to pretty much be in all stocks, as I mentioned, and then be very, very aggressive with it. There is no purpose to it. So let's stop the madness and please get off that train. If for some reason you've been convinced by people in my industry who are telling you the wrong thing, the wrong motivation, jump off that train of trying to beat some perceived benchmark that is meaningless to you. It really is a Pittsburgh Tuesday equation. What matters is your own goals, your own plans, and sticking with that, and let everybody else worry about the market benchmarks, because it doesn't mean a hill of beans to you, whether it's Pittsburgh or Tuesday. I hope that helps. We'll talk to you again next time. All right, my friends, back live in the KMOX studio. I'm overdue for a break. I got to take the last one of this hour, but when we come back, I just kind of want to put the bow on there, tie it nicely, and we'll put everything into context about what you just heard from the latest Simon Says Quick Hit podcast. Stay with us.
Stay connected with the heartbeat of St. Louis. KMOX News, bringing you the stories that matter most. Your connection to St. Louis and the region.
Oh, man, every time I come onto the show, Dave Simon's here, by the way, I always am amazed at how quickly these 2 hours go by. Just really, I just got here and, it's 10 o'clock already? Yeah, it is. So maybe beat the rain home. Looking at radar right now on the screen. Yeah, may have a couple. I know it's raining here downtown St. Louis. I have to head out west about 20 minutes. Looks like they've got some pretty good red stuff, but it's way out west towards Columbia, even west of Warrenton. So just be careful out there, and obviously stay tuned to KMOX for any updates on any of that. Okay, what you heard before the break, it lasted about 11 minutes. Most of my quick hits, that I call them, are about 10 to 12 minutes. And every week it's a completely different topic and subject matter. And you heard me a couple of times reference, I'm putting it up on the screen, or as you can see here. So obviously that is a recording of a video podcast. So what you just heard was taken straight off the YouTube channel tonight. So if you want to go back and look at the archives, I've done about 50 of these now. Like I said, I've been doing them for about a year. I'm loving it. I really am. And I enjoy doing it. It goes back to my old days, because I'm an old broadcast journalism major out of Mizzou, was in the television business the first 10 years of my life. But in the early 90s, completely changed careers and went into the financial service management. That's a long story. I'll bore you with it another day. But it's great to be able to kind of take my old passion, and really probably what's in my DNA as much as anything, and that is kind of that media aspect of it, and bring it together because of the new technology. I love doing both, and to bring them together like that. So if you'd like to check it out, you just go to YouTube, and you know, in the search bar there, just put in Simon's Says Podcast. Now, Simons is S-I-M-O-N-S. Make sure you get that S on the end. A lot of people forget that. Oh, did he say Simon? No, there's an S on the end, and it's only one M. And you'll know you found it when you have a kind of a caricature of me and my bald head with like a microphone. And they actually did a great job putting that together. And then you can peruse all of them. There's quite a few of them, and you got the topics there, so have fun with that, and hopefully you enjoy. Oh, and by the way, do me a favor, please. I've learned how this game works. If you like it, I'm not begging anybody here, and you don't need to necessarily do me any favors, although I guess you kind of can. But hit subscribe. because that's how this game is played. That's what keeps me on, and that also allows me to get some bigger guests. You'll notice in the past that I've had some guests on as well. I've kind of put that to the side for right now. I'll probably pick that up again at the end of the summer. Right now, it's just these little quick 10 to 12 minute quick hits. Speaking, while we're on this whole media thing, one thing I've been doing a long time besides this show, or at least the Dollars and Cents show, which I started back in 96, is a weekly commentary that comes out every Friday morning. So I'll be sending that out tomorrow. And I have over 1,100 subscribers to that. I've been writing it for quite some time. Obviously, it's free. It's anonymous. I don't know who you are. Nobody's trying to sell you anything. You're on a blind Cobb Carpy template. So if you would like to start receiving those, including one tomorrow, I think I've got some pretty fun little informative stuff of what's happening in the financial markets. I don't give any specific stock ideas, so if that's what you're looking for, ain't it. But some other general advice and information that maybe you're not getting elsewhere that puts things in perspective. No one's trying to sell you anything on it. Do with the information what you will. You can just email to David.Simons@UBS.com. That's David.Simons at U, B as in boy, S as in Sam, .com. You don't have to write anything in the body of the email, just in the subject line. Sign me up for the commentary, something like that, and we'll make sure you get tomorrow's. All right, folks, it's been fun, it's been real, and it has been real fun. Have a good one in through the weekend, and hopefully we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Take care.